With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hi, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to the 483rd episode of the Hollywood Reporter's Awards Chatter podcast. I'm the host, Scott Feinberg, and my guest today is a brilliant British playwright and filmmaker. Indeed, he is one of only a small handful of people who have ever operated at the very top of both the theater world and the film world simultaneously. And at only 52, he's just getting started. Martin McDonagh. For the plays that McDonagh has been writing since he was in his mid-20s, including 1996's The Beauty Queen of Lynan and The Cripple of Inishmon, 1997's The Lonesome West, 2001's The Lieutenant of Inishmore, 2010's A Behanding in Spokane, and 2015's Hangmen, he has won 3 Olivier Awards and been nominated for 5 Tony Awards. Meanwhile, he has both written and directed 5 films, the 2004 short Six Shooter and 4 features, 2008's In Bruges, 2012's 7 Psychopaths, 2017's 3 Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, and most recently, 2022's The Banshees of Inisherin, which tells the story of 2 men on an island off the coast of Ireland, played by Colin Farrell and Brendan Gleeson, whose close friendship is suddenly ended by one of them. McDonagh's films have brought him 4 Golden Globe Awards, 4 BAFTA Awards, and 1 Academy Award, Best Live Action Short for Six Shooter, and he has also received 6 other Oscar nominations, Best Original Screenplay for In Bruges, 3 Billboards and Banshees, Best Picture for 3 Billboards and Banshees, and Best Director for Banshees. All 3 of McDonagh's noms for Banshees, plus 6 others for the film, are still pending. McDonagh and I sat down in late February in front of an audience at Santa Barbara's historic Arlington Theater as part of the Santa Barbara International Film Festival's celebration of him as one of this year's recipients of its Outstanding Director of the Year award. Let's go now to my conversation with him there.
Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Oh, you get the fancy couch. I see. I saw all this backstage.
Well, I want to begin by talking about Ireland because I think it's a common misconception that you are Irish, when in fact...
Well, yeah. it's complicated.
Okay, please.
Well, I was born in London, but my mom and dad came over from Ireland in the 60s and had me and my brother there. And so we were always going back and forth to the west coast of Ireland as kids. Our grandparents on my mom's side were still alive then. So I've always been sort of in between both places. I'd say I'm London Irish more than anything else, but I've only got an Irish passport.
Well, very handy
these days after Brexit.
What is it? Is there something that has made you so often in your work on stage and screen come back to not only even just Ireland as a setting for your productions, but also particularly a series of islands off the coast? Let me just mention a few of these names. We have Inishmon, we have Inishmore, and now we have Inisherin, which was originally going to be, or there was a third. Was it Inishir?
Inishir, yep.
Okay.
Very good.
Tell me where that particular, the focus on that particular part of Ireland comes from.
Well, When I was 6 or 7 years old, we visited Inishmore, the largest of the Aran Islands, as kids, because that's just across the bay from Galway, very beautiful county and city. And my dad's from there, from the Gaelic-speaking area there. So that was his first language, weirdly. And I think it's the most beautiful part of Ireland, the whole west coast. My mum's from further up the west in Sligo, and that's where we used to go as kids much more often. But there was something, even as a youngster, it just felt, especially coming from London where I grew up, just you know, so you're in the middle of a city, you know, concrete and steel and all that kind of stuff, and then going to this serene, beautiful, maybe serene might be the wrong word, but beautiful, cinematic, wild place, I guess must have had some kind of impact, definitely visually, and I think I've retained that, and I always kind of wanted to go back to that in a film at some point. But in terms of storytelling, the first plays where I felt free as a writer were all Irish. I'd been trying stuff that was sort of American set or British London set, and was sort of hemmed in by my heroes in those fields, like Pinter or Mamet at the time. But when I was writing plays, I think I combined those guys a little bit with some kind of wild Irish fucked up shit, and it all paid off.
Yeah, exactly.
I recommend.
and fun fact, correct me if I'm wrong, of all those Inish .. Inish Sharon is the only one that doesn't actually exist.
That's true. I had the title Banshees of Inish Sheer for maybe 20 years. I kind of wanted to round off this trilogy of a story set on each of the Aran Islands, and I had one set on Inishmore, one set on Inishmanas. You know, the play that I wrote with that title didn't work, and then 8 years ago I tried something again, which was a little closer to this. That also didn't work. And then I think even when I rewrote it 3 years ago, which is this version, it was still called Inish Sheer, I think. But I went just on my own after the script had finished and looked around Inish Sheer, and it's a beautiful place, but it was a little too small. There wasn't enough cinematically, I think, you could do there. So I kind of then, 3 years ago, got the idea that it had to be sort of a slightly more made-up place, using whichever locations we found, they had to be different ones. And then we found that most of the good places were on Inishmore, the biggest of the Aran Islands. And I hadn't really discovered Achill Island, which is up the coast, closer to where my mum's from. And that was the place with Brendan's house. I don't know, have most of you seen the film? Or So the house where Brendan Gleeson lives on that kind of horseshoe bay is Achill Island. And the lake is Achill, and the pub road is Achill too. Everything else pretty much is Inishmore.
One thing I was interested to learn prepping for, we recently, you were nice enough to come to our writer roundtable for The Hollywood Reporter, and it was you and Tony Kushner, who both, two of our great playwrights, two of our great screenwriters, but very different paths. And in fact, you, while you became known first, I think, for your work in the theater, apparently would have chosen to be a film writer before a playwright. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. Even as like a 12, 13-year-old, I think that's when we got our first video recorder, and I kind of just watched thousands and thousands of films and fell in love with movies then. But the only plays I'd ever go to were when movie stars were in them. So I saw like Al Pacino in American Buffalo as a 14-year-old, and Martin Sheen when he used to come to London. So I never really had a fondness for theater, partly because apart from those plays, which are pretty kind of exciting and cool, a lot of the plays I started seeing in my late teens and 20s were kind of dull. You got to remember it's England. there's no one from England here, is there? Yeah. But I was right. I had been writing for like 10 years and the films I was writing were terrible and blah, blah, blah. Radio plays were getting a little bit better. But when I kind of turned the page on like how to be a writer, plays were the next thing up. And I think I'd learned enough in those 10 years to have some kind of founding in dialogue and character and story, and then to transpose those tools to an art form which I didn't like, which was theater, something kind of clicked. And I think I tried to make plays as cinematic as possible and almost the opposite of the things I was seeing. And somehow I was sort of 24, 25 when this happened. And everything kind of fell into place at that time.
And then when you wanted to come, having established yourself as a man of the theater, to come back to film, was that, you know, quote of yours, one of the fears I had being a playwright was to make a playwright's film, close quote. Does that describe what you mean by that?
I guess the fear was to make something that was just wordy and, you know, set in inside in a couple of rooms and wasn't cinematic, you know, just talking heads. I'm trying to think of the worst examples of playwrights making films now, and I choose not to be bitchy. I definitely didn't want to. I wanted my first thing, be it short or be it a feature, to be as cinematic as possible, which is probably why I chucked so much stuff into the short.
Like, this is Six Shooter that you won the Oscar for, yeah.
Yeah, so there's like, it's 27 minutes and there's, I think, probably five people die. There's a shootout. there's a rabbit that doesn't really make it at the end. There's a lot of crazy shit, and it's all on a train too, which I don't recommend as a first-time filmmaker.
With Brendan Gleeson.
With Brendan Gleeson, yeah.
How did you guys, because I'll obviously ask you this about Colin too, but how do you connect with Brendan for the first time?
I think his brother is a carpenter and he works on theater sets. So he had built, so I met his brother through building the sets in Galway for my first plays. I don't know if it was through that or not, but Brendan came to see a trilogy of plays in Galway right when I was around like 24, 25. So I'd met him there, and I don't even know if we stayed in touch, but I was a big fan. Like, he was like already 25, 30 years ago, the best in Ireland, as he still is. And so he was kind of godlike in a way. So. I think I was speaking to the producer of who was going to do the short with me, and he said, you know, who's your dream person to send it to? I said, well, Brendan Gleeson. And it's funny, you wouldn't usually think of sending a short to someone of that stature, but you hope, I guess the connection, him having seen the plays, I thought, okay, we'll give it a go. And he said yes sort of straight away, so it kind of worked out perfectly.
Well, and that was the beginning of working on film with great actors like Todd, who we just spoke with. You have listed how many, 7 actors for work in your films have received Oscar nominations. Frances McDormand, Woody Harrelson, and Sam Rockwell for 3 Billboards, and Colin Farrell, Brendan Gleeson, Barry Keoghan, and Carrie Condon for Banshees.
Cool.
So that is quite a stat. And
how many did Todd get?
Todd had... I'll let you guys...
I think I'm being beaten Todd by one there. But hey, who's counting?
Yeah. But tell me, like, in your...
Oh, no, he's going to come out later. We've got to do this.
He's going to be shit.
Let's call it a draw.
Yeah. So I imagine that a big part of that, it certainly helps to have great writing if you're an actor, but, you know, to be working from that. But can you pinpoint maybe from the theater or anywhere else where you've figured out how to kind of work so effectively with actors? I think one of the things you always fight for is rehearsal, right? Even on films, which doesn't happen often.
Yeah, very much so. I listened to Todd's answer about that, and I guess for me it was, I'd never directed any of my plays before, but I was always in the rehearsal room from day one with all of them, and would always be talking to the actors, because I worked with a lot of good directors for stage, and the good ones aren't worried about that connection, I think. The bad ones can be insecure about it, but the good ones will let you chat to the actors as much as you want. And through that process of 10 years of talking to actors, I think I had learned a lot that I didn't even know I'd learned when it came to the first day of shooting these films. Because I realized I know about character, but I love actors, and trying to solve issues between us is sort of, in answer to the question you had for Todd, is what is a director? I think that's it, is the friendship or the connection between a director and an actor, and trying to solve everything together, I think is the most important thing in a movie. But it was a tool I didn't know I really had. It didn't really come. I was too nervous, I think, on the short, but on Bruges, when we had the 3 weeks of rehearsal, it was the first time I kind of realized I did have more information than I knew I had. I did like actors, and I could explain why every line was there, or what I thought their reasonings behind each you know, impulse that they had was. So that was a good thing to learn. I think I've carried that through all the films more than anything else.
And we'll note, so Brennan was with you on the short, Six Shooter. Then both Brennan and Colin were with you on your first feature in Bruges, 2008. Great film. Colin was with you on your 2012 feature, Seven Psychopaths. And then, of course, you've reunited the two of them for Banshees. And I guess I just wonder, we've talked a little bit about Brennan, but I guess part A, how did Colin enter the picture? And then part B, can you pinpoint what makes them so good, not just separately, because they obviously are, but especially when you've put them together?
Well, I think, I guess I'd sent Bruges, obviously, to Brendan, and that was like, I think that happened really quickly because we'd made the short and that had all gone well. But I think Colin, I think I met one or two actors for that. Because originally it was sort of written for two English guys, two London guys, strangely. So I was meeting some English actors and some Irish ones. But I just sort of fell in love with Colin as soon as I met him. I was a fan of what he'd done. But I also kind of thought there was something untapped maybe about him in terms of, you know, he'd gone through a lot of kind of the leading roles, and he was great at that. But I kind of wondered about, you know, the more secondary characters, the more sensitive, the more broken type of characters. I kind of felt like it was something that was unexplored, maybe. So we talked, and, you know, I loved them as soon as I met him. And then I kind of knew that Brendan loved Colin, and Colin loved Brendan anyway. So it was almost a no-brainer to get them together. And then we had like 3 weeks of rehearsals, and it was just like literally the three of us like on couches like this, and just having cups of tea and just talking through the script. And I was kind of terrified, you know, because I hadn't worked with two actors of that kind of magnitude before. But I think everyone was, you know. I think Colin hadn't been in a rehearsal process before like that necessarily.
And as he has acknowledged, he was coming out of a pretty bleak period personally, professionally. This was a new lease on life, potentially.
Yeah, I think it was his sort of first or second one, you know, after all of that stuff. So that's probably another, for him, scary part of the process. But it was probably the perfect way to change things up, having someone as brilliant and supportive as Brendan, and someone who's trying to discover things on his own like me. So we rehearsed in Bruges itself, and I remember like at the end of some days we'd get bored and walk outside. And Bruges is so small, you would literally walk to the places where you were going to be filming in 2 weeks' time. And at one point, we sat on a bench where I'd set the scene, and they just quietly started reciting the lines. And I was like, ooh, this is kind of good. This is, we should have a camera here. And literally from day one, it was, that part of it was seamless and easy and a joy. You know, there wasn't even too much. I'm not the kind of director who you know, has to come up with a bunch of motivations, or I couldn't really coax a performance that isn't there. For me, it's sort of getting out of the way of the actors and the script and sort of allowing that truth to unfold.
And so 14 years later, you get them back together for Banshees, although you had shown them each, I guess, a version of the script that you referred to a little bit a few years earlier. And I wonder, obviously these are very different characters than they played in Bruges, but do you think, I mean, one thing that occurred to me watching, everybody's saying, when, please don't wait 14 years before you put them together again, but I wonder, have you ever discussed potentially a theatrical collaboration with them?
I've sort of tried in the past to sort of put it out there. They've sort of refused point blank. So that's that.
That's that, yeah.
Well, no, I think they would be great together on stage. Yeah. But I know it's kind of hard these days to get film actors to do theater.
Beyond the limited engagements, yeah.
Yeah, it's tricky. And no, I think we'll do another film together. I think that's the best
nice.
Way to...
Nice, great. Carrie Condon, who plays Colin's character, sister in Banshees, is somebody I think you might go back further than any of them with, right?
Yeah, even further. I first worked with Carrie when she was like 18, in like 21 years ago. She did the original Lieutenant of Inishmore in the RSC and in London. And she came to Off-Broadway as well. And she was like just dynamite in that. She had long hair to begin with, and we cut all that off. Well, the character had, you know, very short hair, so you have to do that sort of thing. So she's this kind of punky, kind of raging young woman with a air rifle. And just... blew everyone away, and we remained friends ever since then. She did two other plays of mine in the intervening years, but I always kind of wanted to write something for her.
And she pops up in Three Billboards.
She's the girl in the office who gets sort of punched a bit. But yeah, she was brilliant in that too. She's got a great scene with Caleb Landry-Jones in that. And but yeah, I really wanted to create something for her that allowed her to show, you know, exactly what a master she is. And it's great when you do that and they just take it to a whole nother place.
Yeah.
She's amazing.
That's awesome. Banshees is, among a lot of things, I think it's fair to say, partly about the things that one feels one should or needs to give up in order to create lasting art. Right, and the price one pays for doing so. Talk about the degree to which those are things that you have thought about in your own life. I think last night when you were introducing or presenting to Colin and Brendan, you made a little reference to the state of mind you were in when you picked up Banshees again to turn it into the version that we've seen. But just the price one pays to focus on art, the balancing act.
Well, I don't think I've had a terrible time of it, really. But I guess the years before the first play was on, you really had to sort of knuckle down, and there was an awful lot of rejection at that stage, which I guess you have to have some kind of an arrogance to get through it, or force of will or whatever it is, determination. But I think that's probably a different thing to the themes in the movie. I don't really think that a writer or a musician even has to, even if they're creating darker things, I don't think they have to dwell in that. I don't think art has to come from pain. I think a lot of the artists I like have come from those places, but personally, I'd prefer an easy life.
Yeah, right.
I think yeah, I think we've all been through painful things and tragic things and you know, despairing moments, and to be able to tap into that is really, really important, and to tap into that truthfully. But I don't think you have to stay in that place. Hopefully you can you know, not be shy of it and be truthful about it, but not have to dwell there. So the whole debate in the film about Brendan's character, needing space and all that. You do need space, of course, but you don't have to go about it in that way. I'm on team Colin Farrell for Farrick. This.
Yeah.
The fact that you chose...
But then he's a little bit boring. And what are you going to do?
Yeah.
The fact that you chose to set Banshees in 1923...
Not Colin Farrell, by the way, the character.
Not a boring guy. The fact that you chose to set the film in 1923 certainly didn't make your life any easier in terms of finding locations and sets and period clothing and all that. So I assume it was pretty important to you, the fact that you went forward doing that. Can you give us any insight into why... I mean, we do know that at that time the Irish Civil War is raging on the mainland. Is that something that was important for you that we be thinking about when they're having their own civil war on that island?
Yeah, very much. That's exactly it. Yeah, okay. You answered that one for me, Scott.
Sorry.
It's to put up, it's one civil war with the backdrop of another civil war in its simplest terms. But weirdly, like setting something in a definite period like that was part of it, and finding locations that hadn't changed for 100 years was part of it too. I'd never made a period picture before, and it seemed like it's more trouble than it's worth, but it actually wasn't. Like seeing the actors come on, you literally see the characters appear off stage, and because of the costumes for some reason, and I was very fond of that, but it's all about war, I guess, the whole story and stupidity of that.
Yeah. One last question before we go on to the next chapter of all this. Take me into nomination morning of this year. A lot of people, I guess it's fashionable to kind of poo-poo it, but I think it's got to be pretty exciting that not only...
I love that. I think it's fantastic, yeah.
First directing nomination.
Yeah, thanks.
All four of your principal actors nominated. With the help of Paul Mescal, that makes it a full one quarter of all 20 acting nominees are Irish.
Yep.
And Best Picture. I mean, just it's a cool moment, right?
It's amazing. And I know Paul from before. He was in one of my plays a few years ago.
Really?
So I love Paul. So it's great to have your mates. That's the best thing about this whole experience this year is you're going to all these events last night and all of the governors and the Oscar luncheon and all that kind of stuff. And you're just there with your mates. It's just so sweet. And they're all, they're all nice, they're all fun. And I'm friends with the editor and the composer, Carter Burwell and Mikkel Nielsen. And they're there too. It's just it's just crazy, but fun.
Nice. Well, given how busy things have been lately and for a few more weeks, thank you very much for making the time to come to Santa Barbara.
Thanks, Scott.
Really
appreciate
it.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Awards Chatter. We really appreciate it and would really appreciate you taking just a minute more to subscribe to the podcast and to leave us a rating and review on your podcast app. And to follow us on Twitter and Instagram, where our handle is @AwardsChatter. On those platforms, we announce upcoming guests and provide details about special live recordings of the podcast that you can attend. Until next time, thanks again for tuning in.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.